As I indicated to you this morning, over the past 6 or 7 years, there have been many books written and many speeches made critical of the life of the church, indicating the weaknesses in it. And I, for one, do not deplore this. I recognize there is a danger in it, but I have a feeling that this stage of our life together was necessary to cause us to become aware of what our situation is so that we might be thrust into the necessity of modification and change. However, there is an increasing number of voices being raised today critical of the criticism which is being spoken. And many of these voices are calling for positive suggestions as to what to do. For example, there are some laymen in the Sunday school class which I attend when I am in town who say to me, "Finley, we laymen are ready when you preachers give us some leadership, when you tell us what to do." Now, I hope he means what he says, because one of these days we're going to tell him. But very honestly, I speak only for myself. There was a long time in this last 6 or 7 years when I simply didn't know what to do. Actually, when The Quest for Vitality was written, I knew what I felt was wrong with the church, and from a theological perspective, I stated what I thought were basic theological principles that would have to guide us for the answers. But I must confess to you that so far as knowing what to do in a local congregation, I really did not know. And Harold, I believe, I don't believe Henry was with us in 1964, when the very first renewal conference we had, and Gordon Cosby was with us. This was an exercise in defeat, because a group of us gathered together to share our exasperation, our struggles, our problems, in the hopes that some answers might emerge, but real honestly, none did. And I confess to you that in terms of my own experience, immediately following that conference in March of 1964, this was one of the lowest times in my own personal spiritual life, because I had counted so deeply on this conference in 64 providing some light. And for me, it just didn't come. However, while we certainly do not know what the final answers are, and I'm convinced that probably we will never have final answers anymore, I am more and more coming to be convinced that we are living in such a rapidly changing world that whatever comes into existence now as a new way for our life to be expressed, that this is not going to last long, and that we are going to live, in my judgment, in a period of almost continuous change. And therefore, I think we ought to get ready for it. And so I do not propose to suggest to you what are any definitive or final answers, but I would like to share with you what I think, to me at least, have become tremendously meaningful insights in terms of positive suggestions as to ways of implementing in a local congregation this concept of a people of God called to mission, and the priesthood of believers as the ministers of God, and the official ministers as the equippers. Now, This mimeograph sheet is something which, after my wife and I had the opportunity of being on sabbatic leave in 1964-65, and we went in all over Western Europe and studied the lay academies. I had heard so much of the lay academies, I had read so much that the work of these lay academies really was related to the world, it was relevant to the social issues, and this was the wave of the future. And I had the idea, we left in September of 64, this was after March, and I could hardly wait for September to come, because I felt that if I could go over there and study what they were doing in these academies, that I would then be able to come back and say, here is the way, walk ye in it. Well, time does not permit my commenting upon the results of this study, except to say that I came to the conclusion that the work of the lay academies and the approach of the lay academies did not provide the solution to the situation which we faced in the United States. And I wondered, really, because I had the feeling, and I don't know, you know, you never can tell whether God's really leading or whether you just wanting to go. But I had the feeling that the Lord was in my going over to study. And when, as I studied these various places and I became more and more discouraged with what I saw, I wondered, what in the world did the Lord provide the money and the opportunity to come over here to study for? And it was not until I was about halfway through the study that that I came to the conclusion that really, if the Lord was in it at all, the reason that I came was to discover that the lay academies did not provide the answers, and that if we were going to find answers, we were going to have to find them on our own. And so when we came back in October of 65, I had a conference with Dr. Claypool and Bob Kilgore, who was our Minister of Education at that time. We were to talk about some of my experiences and what I felt the life of the church ought to be. And so one day I sat down at the typewriter and I was going to jot down a few notes to guide my thinking as I talked to them over the lunch table. And lo and behold, it ended up near 4 pages. And I just had it mimeographed like it was. And so you see, it doesn't have complete sentences. And it's rough draft. There are some errors in it. Let me just run over very quickly the first part. I mentioned the matter of disillusionment. And This was simply to call attention for myself to the fact that it is my judgment that really a person cannot understand what we are talking about when we mention the concept of renewal unless, first of all, he himself has experienced a real and, I think, deep feeling of disillusionment. Now, by disillusionment, I mean a feeling of frustration relative to what we are now doing. Now, I think one can have an appreciation of what we are now doing, and yet at the same time have a real sense of frustration. I think this is what Harold was talking about with so many of the clergy today. I think they have this sense of disillusionment. Some of them so much that they leave. Now, I think this is tragic. But I think disillusionment, so far as I'm concerned, I think that it is a first and necessary step for a person to understand what renewal is all about. However, I think there is a second element in renewal, which is the positive side. That is, while one is frustrated with where we are and what we are now doing, one is equally convinced that what God is doing is what desperately needs to be done, and one has a deep, tremendous commitment to God and to what God is doing. And so we have this polarity. Now, in this second point, this matter of conviction and commitment, in this period of disillusionment and frustration, one begins to ask again some of the basic questions of life, even asking, is God? Is he real? And asking, what is life about? And what is God doing? And what is God calling me to do? Now, this is the personal element that Bob was speaking to us. And by the way, tonight in the session, I'm going to try to deal with, because I think this is very fundamental, what might be done in terms of practical ways of helping our people to come to this deep personal inner experience with the Lord. I'm convinced that one of our major weaknesses in our present traditional approach is that we lead people to have only a shallow, superficial relationship with Jesus Christ. And what is needed is a real depth experience with God in which God comes alive in us. This is the new people, you see. Now, and I think this, it is in this area of personal spiritual renewal that the small groups make their greatest contribution. However, let me share with you this word under the matter of call. The question is raised, after the small groups, what? Now, the reason for this was that in our church, we had been having small groups for several years. My wife and I had been a part of one of these small groups, and this had been very, very meaningful. And in the small group of which I was a part, or we were a part, we were aware that ultimately we were not meeting simply to minister to ourselves, that ultimately we should go out to the world. And so after we had been meeting for a number of months, somebody said, you know, we ought to be out on mission for God. And somebody said, that's right. What do you suggest we do? And I think the first suggestion was we ought to have a coffee house. Now, this was a time, you know, when the only thing you could do was to have a coffee house. And so we discussed this a while, and some were in favor of it and some were not, so we dropped it. We met on for a while longer, and somebody said, you know, we ought to be on mission. And they said, yeah, that's right. What do you suggest? And somebody suggested something, you know, and we'd discuss it, and a few think this was great, and others say, well, but it doesn't appeal to me. So we dropped it. And we went on a while longer, and after a while somebody said, you know, we ought to be on mission. And we said, what do you suggest? He said, so-and-so. We had discussed it, couldn't agree, so we dropped it. Well, this went on, you know, all for a long time. And just in the summer of 1964, before my wife and I were to leave, it looked like my group was just on the verge of finding a mission. And I thought to myself, man, what am I doing? Here I'm going over there to Europe to study about getting on mission, and these people are going to stay home and do it. I ought to stay here, you know. But we went, and when I got back, one of the first things I did was to go around and find one of these people, you know, in the group, and I said, tell me, what mission did y'all finally decide on? What are you doing? They said, you know, we haven't finally decided yet, but we're talking about it. And now, this is the problem, you see, which we confront. It so happened that my wife and I were in Washington, and we visited the Church of the Savior. And so we talked with Gordon Crosby, and I shared with him this problem which we were having. And I said, "Do you have any suggestions?" And he said, "Yes." He says, "It seems to me that you all are going about this matter of forming your groups in the wrong way." Now, he said, "Don't form your groups first and let them choose a mission. First, identify the mission areas and then let a group form around the mission area." Well, this is what started the wheels to moving, and obviously what I will be saying is deeply based upon Gordon's approach, and I gladly give to him credit. But this was the proposal then that I came back and shared with John and Bob. Now, there is one further word that I want to say before we get into the specific proposals about what to do. And this has to do with a matter of call. I am personally deeply convinced that a person accepts a mission only in response to a call from God. Now, I think this is important because I do not think that a person does this because he's interested in it. I think we are chosen for it. I do not think that one does it because it is the program of his church. I do not think that one does it because it's the program of his pastor. I think that the only adequate motivation for becoming involved in a mission for God is to do so in response to God's call to your life to this mission. Now, let me explain to you why I think this is important. When one becomes involved in a mission for God, this is no small matter. You see, we are called to be ministers, and we are to express our ministry in terms of some mission in which God is involved and in which he is engaged. Now, this is not easy. And depending on the nature of the type of mission, this is going to demand the involvement and the giving of our lives. This is not taking a basket of food to a group of poor people. This is not taking clothes to some people who are naked, as fine as this is. This is giving your life to these people in God's name. Let me point out something to you. When we go to the world, particularly to some of the underprivileged areas of the world, as messengers, ministers of God, we had better not expect that the world is going to receive us with open arms. They are not going to say, "Oh, how wonderful it is. The people from First Baptist Church have finally come down to help us. Poor, benighted people. Are we so thank you for loving us this way?" No, no. These people, in the main, are going to hate you. And in spite of whatever protest you may make about your love, they are going to resent you because you are representative of the society which has been stepping on their neck. And you are representative of the authority against which they rebel. And many times, they are going to lash out at you. Many times, they are going to take what you have to give and then cut your heart. They are going to despise you and reject you. But you see, no matter how they respond to us, no matter what they do, we have still got to keep on going back. And no matter how many times it snows, no matter how many times the rains come, no matter how black the night is, we have to go back and go back and keep on going back. Because this is what our Lord did. Because you see, you and I rebelled against the Lord. We despised Him. We rejected Him. We persecuted Him. We spat upon Him. And if He had not kept on coming back to us, we would not be here. And so you see, this is not a way of salving our conscience in going down to these people and saying to them, we tried, but they didn't want us. You see, we have got to love these people in God's name, for God's sake, and we have got to give our lives as a sacrifice to God in behalf of these people. And there is only one thing that will keep us going back and going back and going back. And that is to know that in all of God's world, He's called me to be in that place. You see, my church can have this program, and I'll go for a while, but I can quit pretty easily. I can respond to the call from my pastor, and I can go for a while, but I can salve my conscience and quit pretty easily. These are not that which lead us. This isn't what tells us about our mission. You see, we are under the call of God, and we must understand this. And it is to God we respond, and it is to God we are responsible. And it is only He who can release us. And so, I think we cannot emphasize too much this matter of the importance of the call. We do not go here, we do not go there, simply because we want to. We go where we are called. Of course, one of the basic questions that we face is, how do you know where God is calling? And I will not discuss it here, but in the discussion period, if you will ask the question, I'll be glad to try to answer it. But let me go now into this matter of types of mission. Well, let's just look at the proposal. What we suggested was, following Gordon's idea that you identify the areas of need, the suggestion was that we would try to identify as many areas of need where we felt God was working in our community, in our city, as we could think of. These we would have mimeographed or printed, say, and after proper preparation of the congregation, because you see, the congregation has to be prepared, otherwise they do not, this is just another program. And they will understand what this is, this is what it means to be on mission, and something about the call of God. And that they are the ministers, and God is calling them in the world to be His ministers. And their task is to seek to discern, where in the world does God want me to be? You see, We have been asking the right questions. We just haven't been putting the right emphasis on these questions. We go up to a person sometimes and say, "Where in the world have you been?" Which is a good question, but you see, the emphasis is, "Where in the world have you been?" So we say, "What in the world have you been doing?" This is good, too, see? But we ought to ask them, "What in the world have you been doing?" So, these, we got to put the emphasis in the right place. And these would be listed, presented to the membership, ask them to, say, take them home for a week or 2 weeks and pray about it, and ask, "Where in the world is God calling me?" Make this a matter of prayer. Go down the list every day. And if God speaks, then you check this. Turn it in to the staff. And if three or four people, God calls three or four people to work in a certain place, then they will form a group. And thus, you see, the group is formed around the mission. Now, let's look down here at the types of mission which are available. Now, this is, I would like to make a change, at least in the numbering. If you would put under general mission, put Roman numeral 1. Roman numeral 1. Under the bottom of page, or at the bottom of page 1. Yes, under types of mission, where it says general mission. Oh, that's. Yours is. All right, where it says 1 under types of mission, write in Roman numeral 1 and put general mission. That's the correction that needs to be made. Now, this, where it says for number 2, witness in vocation, above that, write Roman numeral 2 and put specific missions and change number 2 to number 1 under Roman numeral 2. Now, the reason for this is this Roman numeral 1, which is a general mission, is the mission to which I think all Christians are called all of the time. And this mission is, you see, the fact that we are called by God to be His person. This is our basic mission, the fundamental mission. That is, we are to be ministers and witnesses to God in our normal, human, everyday relationships. That we are God's. And wherever we are, and whatever we do, we thereby give a witness. In a lady who goes to the grocery store on Saturday and gets caught in a long, slow line, how you react in this line is a witness, either for or against God. And when you talk to your neighbor over the backyard fence, what you talk about, whether gossip or otherwise, is a witness for or against God. You see, by our very nature. Yeah. How about that? How about that? That's what I'm talking about. You see, wherever you are. in your just normal relationships. That is to say, we are God's. And because we are his people, wherever we are and whatever we do, we must remember whose we are. And we must be a loving. Now you see, the reason this lady was able to do this was that she really cared about this checkout lady. That she would pray for him. Well, when we drive down the street, I forget who it was, but it, from our church, one of our members shared this, that when she was driving down in the traffic, you know, and you get all frustrated because the traffic lights make you stop, and you just sit there ready to go. So one of the things that she started doing is to look on either side of her at who's in the car. And of course, obviously she doesn't know, but she just prays for this person in the car next to him. Said it helps, you know, pass the time a whole lot better, you know, when you're praying for the person next to you. Now, this you see, this is that we must in our essence be the kind of person who loves and who by our very nature helps people to be aware that we care. And thus, in some way, we can be the instrument of God's love to these people. This is basic, fundamental, for all of us. And you see, the thing we must remember is that our basic calling is to be instruments of redemption. This is why we exist. And may I say that this redemption is twofold, as I said yesterday. It is both personal for the individual and social for God's world. This is what God is trying to do, and this is what he's calling a people to do. Now, Roman numeral 2, which is specific missions, where all people are called to be witnesses all of the time in this general mission, I think some people are called to a special mission. Now, I am not sure whether all people are called to special missions or not. This is an area where I still really don't know. But I'm quite sure that God calls some to a special mission. But while we say we're going to list here three possibilities, God doesn't call you to all three of them. He calls you to one of these special missions. Now, let me illustrate the type of special missions that we mentioned here. One is a witness in one's vocation. Now you notice I say there are some Christians. Now notice that underscore some. Some Christians, and this is in response to the call of God, will feel called to express their mission primarily through their vocation. Now let me use the lawyer as an illustration. Jim's lawyer down there. Suppose a lawyer says, now look, I work 16 hours a day. I really do not have a great deal of time to go out here, there, and yonder and do these things. But I have people in need coming to me all of the time. And I feel a real call from God that my mission is to be his minister through this vocation. This is how I want to be an instrument of redemption in this vocation. Well, now you say, how to do it? You see, here is where we preachers simply don't know. I don't know how to do it. But if a group of lawyers were deeply committed to this, they could get together and they could study the Bible, study whatever books they could find. They could share ideas. They could pray. They could search. And I think that God would reveal to these men ways of trying to be an instrument of redemption through one's vocation. But, you see, in order to do this, one must deeply want to be a minister through his vocation. Because, you see, most of us in our vocation just buy and sell. We just are good, decent, honest people. But, you see, there is a difference between being a minister and being a good, decent, honest person. Our purpose is to try to be a minister of redemption for God in a given situation. Or a group of doctors, you see, might get together. A group of businessmen might get together. Let me give you another illustration that happened to me several years ago. I was preaching, supplying over in the church to which I belong, and I was interested in this area, and like so many preachers, I was trying to urge the laymen to put their religion into practice in their daily life and to be Christian in their vocation and to be a witness in their vocation. And I was telling them these things, you know, like I knew what I was talking about. And Wednesday night, when we came down for teachers and officers meeting after Sunday, one of the young surgeons stopped me and said, "Finley, I enjoyed the sermon." Of course, you know, I said, "Fine, thank you very much. I appreciated that." He's a man of quite discernment, I knew. But he said, "I want to ask you a question." Well, I should have known something was up then, but, you know, I was so proud of the compliment that he caught me with my bars down. And so I said, "Yes, what is it, Sam?" He said, "You know, you said that we ought to be a witness through our vocation." I said, "That's right, boy." He said, "Well, now, you know me. I'm a surgeon. How should I express a witness for God through my vocation?" You know, I couldn't think of a thing for him to do. You know, what would be a difference between a good Jewish doctor? What would he do that Sam do that a good Jewish doctor? Now, every one of them is going to operate the very best they know how. And I presume they're going to use the best bedside manner, you know, pat their hands and whatever they do to the ladies and make them feel good, this sort of thing. But what is it that would be uniquely Christian? Now, I thought of one thing that he ought not to do. You know, you're going to get ready for an operation, and they wheel you up to the operating room, and they open the doors, and you go in there, and you look around the wall, and you see all of this knives and forks and other things around. They got all the bright lights shining, you know, and they got the doctor in there with his dress on and hat and the mask on. The nurses around so quiet, and the steam escaping from these things they got around it. And they lift you off of the stretcher, you know, onto the operating table, and right over there's this great big light shining right down on you. And then the doctor come over just before they put the pentothal in, come in, say, "Are you ready to meet God?" Yeah. I think this is probably not the best way to do it. But now the question is, how? Now we preachers, let me just make a wee bit of a confession. We preachers have been saying to you laymen, be Christian in your business, be Christian in your vocation. As I say, like we thought we knew what we were talking about, and like you knew what we were talking about, when really neither one of us knew what we were talking about. Now, obviously, I and no other preacher that I know could be able to say to a lawyer or an architect or a businessman or advertising man or factory worker or a management worker, you know, to say, here is how you do. We don't even know the questions that you face, much less what the answers are. Now, I think that you men are going to have to discover the ways of being a minister in your vocation. If this is what God is doing, if this is what God is calling for, then I think that the people in a given vocation need to get together and study and search and share and pray together until light comes, and then they try certain things and they come back and share some more. And I am convinced that if a group of men are serious in this search, that God will give some answers. I believe it. So this is one possibility, that of following, of trying to be a witness through one's vocation. Now, if you will turn the page, there is a second possible specific mission, namely, to engage in a special mission to and in the world. Again, notice that we say some Christians will feel called to express their mission primarily through a ministry to certain problem or needy areas in the life of the world, such as delinquency, slum areas, the rehabilitation of convicts, ministry to unwed mothers, ministry to the elderly, to the industrial worker, to the university student, to the foreign students. You see, wherever there is need, I think God is there working. And I think he's calling for some of his people to join with him in these places. And we need to discern where this is. And if a group of people, for example, want to minister to some unwed mothers, and they feel this is what God, this is the ministry to which God is calling them, then I think these people should form themselves into a group. Now, the first thing they're going to have to do is to become equipped. They're going to have to study. They're going to have to study the best books they can find in the area of ministry to this type of person. What are the problems that these people feel? What is the rejection? What is the loneliness? What are the difficulties? What about the parents? What about other things? What are the legal aspects? All of these things. You see, we cannot go down to these people with simply good intentions, because if we do, we may do more harm than good. We've got to know. And if we have been called by God to this ministry in his part of the world, then we must become as equipped as a layman, as the best social worker. And indeed, we must make proper relationships with these social workers and these social agencies. And they must come to understand that we are serious about this. We are not a bunch of do-gooders who are simply coming down there to give it a nod from God. That we are willing to come down here and become trained and equipped and intelligent and willing to become involved in the lives of these people. And so they form themselves into a group and they study. And they share. And they discuss. And they pray. And they go. They minister. And then they come back. Once they start ministering, the group continues to meet because they continue to study. And they continue to share. What happened? I share, for example, in terms of what happened with me and the person with whom I have been related. And then I ask the group, how do I do next? What suggestions do you have? Others share in this. And thus, you see, we come and study and share with one another, and then we pray. And then we go out again. And this happens week after week, and the group continues to meet, and we continue to study, and we continue to go. So, this is a second type. And the third type is one may find his call from God to express his mission to, in, and through the church. And whenever I come to this point, I always have to give credit to my wife, because she was the one who taught me in this area. When I started thinking of the world, you know, that we needed to get out of the church building into the world, the only place that I could think of as being world was the West End of Louisville, the deprived area, the neglected area, you know. And my wife said to me, I don't feel called to go to minister to the Negroes. I don't feel called to minister to the underprivileged. She said, my calling is to minister to the beginner children at Crescent Hill Baptist Church. Well, of course, when she first said this, I haven't never told her this before. What's one of the things about this matter of renewal? It makes you start being honest and not too good sometimes. But when she first said this, I thought to myself, well, you know, you're really not with it yet. you'll come to find out where the world is. But the more I thought about it, the more I was aware that she not only was with it, but she was ahead of me. Because the church is also a part of the world. And that God was working in his church, and that God was calling some of his people to minister for him in and through his church. And so there will be people whose call from God will be to minister in and through the church. And of course, many of the things which we will do in the church will be like the things we are doing now. For example, this matter of teaching. God does need somebody to teach these little children. And surely God needs somebody to teach these adolescents who are so confused and perplexed. Man, in this world of confusion, and here they are trying to find their way, God needs somebody to teach these people. And bless your heart, God needs somebody to teach our adults too. Somebody who knows what God is about and who can teach our adults what God is about. You know, we talked about how we're going to get our people to know this. Well, you see, if some of our teachers knew what God was about in the world and what he was trying to do in the world and who his ministers were and what he was calling his ministers to do, then these people could teach our adults and they could come to understand and respond to God's call. So we desperately need this. And the matter of training. You see, this is the kind of thing. But, let me say, in this area, as in the vocational, as in the ministry to the needy areas, one responds to this in response to a call from God. And thus one commits his life to this area of ministry with the same abandon that one commits his life to the unwed mothers, to the delinquents, to the foreign students, to the others. You offer your sacrifice to God in behalf of the people. This means what? That these who have said, as I have sought to discern where God is calling me, it is to this area of ministry in the church. Therefore, those of us who feel this way also will form ourselves into group or groups, and we will become equipped, trained for this job. This is a ministry unto God in behalf of people, and it is for the purpose of redeeming the situation and the people, and therefore all that I have must be his. Therefore, I must be equipped. Thus, this problem which we face in our churches of trying to beg people to train, to become equipped, come to teach his meaning, this is for the birds. If we have people who have been called by God to this ministry, and they give their lives to these people whom they teach. Now, I'm not recommending this, but I'll tell you what one church thought about it. Whether they ever carried it through, I do not know. But they thought about the possibility, and here is an area where I must confess I have really not made up my own mind, but I simply throw it out for whatever it may or may not be worth. But they decided they were going to experiment in one adult department in their Sunday school, or a strong department, so that it was strong enough that if the experiment didn't work, it wouldn't destroy the department. They decided that they were going to go into this department and ask the teachers, "Are you called by God to this task?" And they're going to, you know, try to explain to them what was meant. For the ones who said, "No, I really am not. I was called by the preacher, the superintendent, or whoever it was I couldn't get away from, you know." And we're going to let them resign. And whatever was left, if it was just one man teaching, one woman teaching, they would stay there. If they were doing this because of God's call, they would stay. And they had the feeling that the lives coming in contact with the life who was called to this ministry, even though it may be taught in a much larger setting, that the Spirit of God would work in this setting probably more effectively than it would in a smaller setting where the person was there not in response to the call of God. Now, I don't know. Yeah, but this is what they did. Well, let me rush on here. The second, you know, the matter of teaching and training is one thing. In this mission of outreach or visitation. Now, one of the things which we do in the church is to reach people. Now, I'm of the opinion that God wants to redeem all of his people. And I believe that we are sent to try to bring people so that they will come under the teaching of the word and under the preaching, so that the Spirit of God might have a chance to minister to them. And so I believe in reaching people. So we have a program of visitation. Now, I'm going to make a statement here with which you may not be in agreement, but I'll make it anyway. Namely, I do not believe that everybody is called to visit. And this, I think, is one of our problems. In the Sunday school and other places, we try to get everybody to visit. We pound them over the head. We know they are not, but we try to make them feel guilty because they don't. I don't believe that everybody is called to visit, but I believe some people are. Now, here's what I think the church should do. I think the church should call out the ones who feel called by God to this matter of visitation. You know, there are some people on whose heart this lays as a heavy burden, and they love to do this. Let's call these people out and form them into one or more groups. Then what? Let them become trained, study, to become equipped for this task, for this ministry. Just like the person who goes to minister to the delinquents must study. These people will study. They'll make their plans. They will share, discuss. They will pray. Then they'll go out. And then they'll come back and study some more and pray and share and go out. So you see, let these people be called to this ministry. Now, this next one, this mission of evangelism. This statement may shock you, if you were in favor of the other one, you may not be in favor of this statement that I'm going to make. I do not believe that everybody is called to make an evangelistic visit. Now, I do not want you to misunderstand me. I am not saying that I do not believe that everybody ought to be an evangelist, a minister, because, you see, this is what we're called to be. Our basic commitment is to be an instrument of redemption. And even, by the way, even when we go to minister to the delinquents and to these others and we are trying to love them, we are not just wanting to minister to them in their physical, social, psychological needs. We want to do this. But ultimately, we want to lead them to know Jesus Christ. For this is their basic problem. Now, I don't mean by this that when we first go down, we say to them, "Are you saved?" Well, we may work with them for a year before we say anything about it. But you see, here we are trying to minister to the totality of the person, and his total need is psychological, it's social, it's physical, it's economic, and it's spiritual. And we cannot minister to the whole person. We cannot be the instruments of redemption for God unless we involve the totality of this ministry, you see. And I think that to minister to the social without ministering to the spiritual is just as bad as ministering to the spiritual without ministering to the social. You see, either one by itself. Now, oh God, if only we could keep this thing in balance. You know, somehow or other, we just take off on one tangent or the other. If we could only keep it in balance. This is the way God, I think, wants us to be. So all of us are to be instruments of redemption. But I don't think that all of us are called to make evangelistic visits. Now, you know what I mean by this is where we go out and knock on a person's door and we say, "I'm from such and such a church," and we go in and try to make a visit. Not all people are called to do this. And yet we try to make people feel guilty because they don't do this. I don't think God calls everybody to do this kind of way, but God calls some. Again, what we ought to do is to call out from the church those people whom God is calling to this particular mission. And these people ought to be formed into a group or groups, and they ought to study to become equipped for this ministry. Now, one of the first things they ought to study is the doctrine of salvation, so they'll understand what it means to be saved, and they'll not go out half-baked with a bunch of formulas which they can get people to assent to, in which God does not become alive in the lives of people. They need to become equipped for this ministry. then they need to pray and then go out. And thus, you see, from this ministry of going out in visitation and evangelism, we ought to be having people come in all of the time. People ought always to be professing a faith in Jesus Christ because these people are going. Now, one or two concluding remarks. Notice the third paragraph on page 3. At least it's the third paragraph on my sheet. I think Miles are not exactly together. Everyone in the church fellowship is not called to do the same thing. Now, this is something we need to understand. We should have known this all along. We have a variety of gifts, all of which are important. Now, our job is to discern God's call in light of His gifts to us. Now, let me again make a bit of personal confession to you in terms of this next paragraph. There are many areas of need, and I am interested in many areas. I can't do them all, but I'm interested in many areas. I'm interested in working with the Negroes. I'm interested in working with the poverty people. I'm interested in working with the foreign students. I'm interested in working with the young people. I'm interested in working here. I'm interested in working there. I'm interested in so many areas. There's so many things that need to be done. So you know what I do? Nothing. And, you know, well, I do worry about it, not doing these things. Now, this is the temptation for us, isn't it? There's so many things that need to be done. Our problem is to discover where in the world is God calling me to discern the one area. And this is the problem. Now, it is my judgment that each individual generally should have only one major mission in which he is involved for God. And he ought to give himself with complete abandon to this mission. This mission may be outside the church. Now, I don't want to tear up any churches, but our pastor and staff have agreed that if one of the people working in our church comes and says to them, "I feel called to a mission outside the church. I would like to be relieved from my church responsibilities," we will relieve them. We will free them to fulfill the mission to which they are called. Now, this concept seems to me to fulfill the statement of Trueblood and others that the local church ought to be a miniature theological seminary. Let me try to spell this out in a bit of detail for you. First of all, it is like a seminary in terms of its student body. That is, its personnel, membership, its student body are called to the ministry. The church members are called to the ministry. In the second place, a student body is called for a variety of ministries. Not all of our students are called to the same ministry here. We have social workers, education workers, music workers, preachers, missionaries, etc. Variety of callings. Now, in the ministers are the students. On the church, or in the church, the staff corresponds to the faculty. The faculty is to equip the ministers for their ministry. Now, it is not expected in the wildest imagination that those of us on the faculty here at the seminary are expected to go out in all of Louisville and all of Kentucky and all the surrounding territories and do the ministry for God. No, we are here equipping the ministers who themselves will go out into all of these places. Well, this is the way that the staff is to equip the ministers who are to go out. Now, also, the curriculum is similar. Namely, in the seminary, we have a core curriculum which is required of all students, irrespective of their specific vocational intent. All of the students are required to take certain courses. But in the seminary also, there are certain specialized vocational courses which are designed to equip the men for their particular ministry. And it is not expected that all of the students will take these specialized vocational courses. Everybody's not supposed to take everything. All right. Now, how would this look in terms of a local church and its practical organization? In my judgment, there are three basic things a local church ought to do. Number one, the church ought to worship. All of the people ought to worship. It is here that we meet God, and God meets us. Secondly, the core curriculum I think that all people, all of the church, needs to engage in a serious study of the Bible and theology, ethics, church history. And this, even though the Sunday School Board has this divided differently, I would do all of this on Sunday morning. That is to say, I think the church ought to engage in serious study of a core curriculum. And this, in my judgment, would take place on Sunday morning. Third, I think the church ought to be on mission. Or at least some of them may not yet be ready, getting ready for mission, but let's just use the concept of being on mission. And this is all that the church, in my judgment, ought to do. And if the person does this, then we have fulfilled, I think, what God has called us to do. Now, before I am lynched, let me indicate to you how, in this concept of being on mission, how we combine three of the work of three of our present organizations. In these small groups that I've talked about, whether we're talking about a group of doctors, vocation, or group of people interested in delinquency meeting together, a group of teachers meeting together, these people on mission and study and praying and sharing and going out. In these groups, we are fulfilling the purpose of training. This is the way we are equipped for the ministry which we are to perform. Group of people get together to study. Now, one of the weaknesses of our present training program is that the training which is given is of such a generalized nature that it does not equip us for any specific mission. And therefore, one can go through this for years and never really become equipped for any kind of serious ministry. Thus, you see, this would fulfill the purpose of training, and it equips a person for a specific mission in which he is involved. You see, it is involvement, it is going and coming all along, and thus the training which he is getting is dynamic and meaningful.